call the Senate Health Committee meeting to order. Let the record show that all committee members are present. Before we start, there's two things. One is our recording secretary had a birthday this week, so I told her I would do this, whether she liked it or not. So she advanced one year in age. And also before we, well, let me just say what we're going to do and go that route. With us we have, if you want to call it, both sides of the issue. But up until now, never did we really get both sides of the issue together to each present their side of the issue. And this is an attempt to do that. It's not a formal debate, it's more of a forum. But what we will do is we'll allow up to 15 minutes each side to present their side of what they, as they perceive the situation should be. And then after that, we'll allow committee members, of course, to ask questions, and other senators and representatives are all over the place. We have Senator Binkley with us, Senator Zaroff, who is the cause of this thing, and I don't know who else is out there. I thought
Senator Springer and
Representative Collins. And you're all welcome to come up, and feel free also to participate in the questioning and answers. And before we get going, though, I had a visit today from Dr. John Rowlett, who's Chief Academic Officer of Eastern Kentucky University. And I, when he came in, I said, well, look, why don't you just say what you do in Eastern Kentucky and just take a couple minutes, not many. And with that, I beg your indulgence to hear from somebody that doesn't cost the state a dime, and yet we're going to get more than 2 cents worth out of them. So, Dr. Rowlett, why don't you just come up? We are in teleconference too. I might say that I forgot all about it, but there's about 15 sites in the state, and it's a one-way teleconference. They're listening. They're not going to participate. All participation will be here at this table. So, but it goes from Anchorage, Bethel, Dillingham, Fairbanks, Juneau, Kodiak, Ketchikan, Met Valley, Sitka, Soldotna, Valdez, Homer, Wrangell, and some other two or three other sites. So with that, why don't we get going, and if you just want to hit the button, doctor, and just identify yourself and just tell us how you do it in Eastern Kentucky, if it's any different than what we're doing here in Alaska.
What is the name of this institution?
It's Eastern Kentucky University. And Senator Curtillo, they didn't do so hot this year in basketball, but they are doing pretty well in raising, growing tobacco, which I know you would.
I have a lot of friends in Kentucky, a number of professors. Good friends at Berea, as well as University.
I'm sorry.
I said I had a lot of friends in Kentucky over the years.
Well, I have just found out that I have an alumnus of our institution sitting to my immediate left, a graduate of our accounting department in 1971.
Go ahead, sir.
All right. My name is John Rowlett. I've been a member of the faculty at Eastern Kentucky University for 36 years. I'm the chief academic officer of the university and have been since 1972. We organized as a university in the mid-60s, as did all of the former state teachers' colleges in Kentucky. One of the charges given to these new regional universities was to serve as a community college for the region served by the institution. So, in addition to being a traditional university offering all of the customary undergraduate and graduate programs, but not doctoral programs, we were charged with developing community college programs. I was dean of the College of Applied Arts and Technology, and in that college, we developed an array of career ladder associate degree programs, and these programs were developed in other colleges at our university. And they were developed at our sister institutions at Murray State, Western State, Morehead State, and the like. So we're a regional university, but we're also a community college for our region. We are an open admissions institution as far as our community college programs are concerned. In fact, the entire university would be classified as an open admissions university at the undergraduate level, so long as a student had completed the pre-college curriculum, which is the kind of high school curriculum that I completed when I was in high school, and I'm sure that many of you have completed. Students who have not completed that curriculum are required to do a little makeup work when they come to the campus for baccalaureate programs, but not for associate degree programs. In cooperation with the American Association of State Colleges and Universities and its counterpart organization, the Land-Grant Colleges and Universities, We have conducted a number of studies periodically over the last 15 to 20 years to seek to identify the involvement of four-year colleges and universities in offering associate degree programs. Our most recent study was completed in 1981 on our campus, and this study showed that 185 publicly supported four-year colleges and universities offer community college programs, associate degree programs, enrolling in excess of 120,000 students. And this was double the number of students that we found in a study done in 1971. It's a very active sort of thing that's going on. My background is vocational and technical education. I have a strong commitment to community college programs. I have a strong commitment to an open admissions policy at a university such as ours. And we find that this kind of an organization works very, very well on our campus and many of the other campuses with which I'm familiar. The community college programs are visible. They are respected. They're a part of the university. And I think at that point, unless I stop, I will take a lot longer than you wish for me to take.
No, that's fine. You would agree to answer questions.
I'm sorry?
You would agree to answer questions?
Surely, surely.
Okay, Senator Jones.
Dr. Litt, what I understand that your university has a community college, right with it. I say you're integrated. Within your...
Yes, it is. It is integrated within our university.
Now, what about other community colleges within your area?
Do you... There are both public and private community colleges in our service region, which basically includes the mountainous region of Kentucky, a region that is fairly sparsely populated. We are working cooperatively with the three publicly supported community colleges in our region to take upper division courses to these campuses. And this is a cooperative venture. They very much request and want us to bring these courses to their campuses to serve the needs of students who have earned associate degrees but are place bound and do not feel that they can cut loose and come to Richmond.
Just to follow up, Doctor, are these colleges in a separate system from yours?
These colleges are operated by the University of Kentucky. 13 colleges operated by the University of Kentucky community colleges.
Senator Josephson.
Dr. Lett, you mentioned that your studies indicate that there are a set or a growing set, I inferred, of universities which offer community college programs.
This was true in 1981.
Yes. You also mentioned that those were schools, if I understood, that offer master's degree programs.
Some of them do. Some of them offer doctoral degrees.
They do. That was my
question. At our institution, we are limited to master's degrees in terms of our graduate studies. But it's a variety of at least baccalaureate degree granting institutions. And they may extend with graduate studies.
You see, one of the concerns that some of us have, it's not just a concern about the community college mission being performed and being visible, because a lot of our students are not the traditional post-high school student, but adults. But another part of that concern is the quality of the university program. And without a significant graduate-level private educational presence in Alaska, you know, I, for one, I think some of my colleagues are looking for, ultimately, PhD programs in Anchorage as well as Fairbanks and high-quality university programs at every level. Could you comment about the effect, if any, of community college offerings within the framework of the university, not on the community college programs, but on the university?
If the point that you're getting at is does our administrative organization or instructional organization sap dollars that might otherwise go for graduate instruction and research, I think my answer would be no. At our institution, we run about 25 master's degree programs. The community college students will take the same developmental studies courses, if they need developmental studies courses, that our baccalaureate students will take, and some of them need developmental studies. can take the same English 101 and 102. It is a highly cost-effective thing. Now, when you talk about developing additional PhD programs, you're getting to something that's very costly, and I know you know that.
I wasn't speaking in terms of the
maybe dollar. I missed your question.
Well, no, you did. That was fine, and I wasn't. I wasn't directing my question in terms of the dollars so much as I was qualitatively. For example, what is the flagship institution in Kentucky? Is that the University?
University of Kentucky.
And they offer doctorate programs.
They offer doctoral programs, and the University of Louisville, a former private municipal university, came into the system in 1972. Now it's publicly supported with an array of doctoral programs, a med school, a law school, engineering school, etc.
Okay. And does the University of Kentucky offer community college programs at its flagship campus?
No, it does not. But it has in Lexington, one of its 13 community colleges, Lexington Community College. I have a daughter who's an assistant professor at that college. So it does not have one integrated at UK, but it's on its campus.
That really gets to the heart of the matter from this aspect. Maybe you could tell us what is the resistance to the integration at the flagship campus of the community college program at the University of Kentucky? Was it a concern for the quality of the university offerings if you incorporate community college program, or was it some other factor?
Well, I don't think there was resistance. I think the plan was for the University of Kentucky to supervise an array of community colleges that has evolved over the years, and the 14th one is being planned for far western Kentucky in a fairly populated area that does not have one. And the University of Kentucky, in keeping with this plan, placed a community college on its main campus. It is called Lexington Community College, located within a rock's throw from the football stadium. It offers an array of technical and transfer programs. So they didn't make any attempt to integrate it. They've got it on its campus. It was not an issue that I ever recall coming out.
Senator Petula.
Seems to me you make a pretty strong case that this could be done in this state. Berea, that's not your college, is it?
No, Berea is 13 miles down the road. A wonderful private institution with a strong emphasis on work study.
That's what I understood. I didn't realize it was a private institution.
No, it's a wonderful institution with about 1,400 students.
You have a very innovative program statewide, don't you, to support people that want to get back into the educational system?
Berea?
Berea is one for the poor, right? I mean, they're relatively poor people.
Yes.
They've got to go, but also your community college program.
Also the community college programs, and I would also like to thank the regional universities, and I think increasingly all institutions are attempting to address the matter of access. In Kentucky this past year, we had about 42,000 young people complete high school diplomas. We had 12,000 adults complete the GED equivalency. And this number is growing by leaps and bounds, and private industry and all kinds of groups are supporting and encouraging adults to move ahead and get the GED equivalency behind them. And we welcome those who have completed the GED at our institution, and we have a goodly number of them coming in. About 24% of our students are non-traditional, part-timers.
Pardon me for wandering from the question I really wanted to pose. I heard Senator Josephson, I suppose I have a real populist tradition and background, but I mean populist 30 years ago maybe, not the one that I see claiming the title today, but it seems to me that there's a real value in upward mobility for people at almost any age. The community college in your system allows to go into the community college and move into the university system, and you're saying it doesn't take away from the quality of the university system for those that do make the upward movement.
It has not done that in our institution.
I wouldn't think it would if it was handled properly.
No, if it's handled properly, I don't think it will. And certainly within our own institution, the matter of transferability of credits has been addressed very, very adequately. Many students began an associate program in industrial technology And if at a later date they choose to pursue a baccalaureate degree program in industrial technology, they can do that generally without any loss of credit at all.
Doctor, a follow-up. If a student takes English 101 at the community college system, is it automatically accepted throughout
the system? It's automatically accepted at our institution. No questions asked.
So there any course that has the same numbering?
That is a collegiate level course.
Yes.
Now, if it's a developmental studies, and most institutions ought to have these courses and do have them to help the underprepared, the developmental studies, while we would accept it for transfer credit, would not be applicable to a degree. A developmental studies course on our campus is not applicable to a degree. But English 101 at any community college, University of Alaska, that is transferred in our direction, we accept it, no questions asked.
Okay, we'll have one more question, Senator Jones, then we do have to go on with it. So, Senator Jones.
Doctor, are you familiar with the funding of the community college system and the university system there in Kentucky?
Generally, yes.
Is the community college system funded under separate appropriations from the university system?
We have a formula system of funding in Kentucky for our system of higher education that is based on credit hour production by discipline. This funding situation ought to provide the same dollars for X number of hours in English 101 at a UK community college or at Eastern Kentucky University or at the UK main campus. The funding varies by discipline because some disciplines are much more expensive than others. The PhD three-semester hour credit course will yield many, many more dollars than 3 hours in English 101. And in addition, the formula provides for space and the usual sorts of things. But it's a funding formula process. And as far as I know, the community colleges fit into the formula just like Eastern Kentucky University, as far as I know.
Senator Jones.
Mr. Chairman, so you have a formula for funding university and community college.
That's correct.
Courses all.
That's correct.
In one night. Okay.
And courses is only one part of it, but it is a major part. And the number of square feet on the campus to be maintained is another big part. And there are other things, but the credit hours is a big chunk of it.
Go ahead, Senator Joseph.
I just want to state for the record my support for populism, upward mobility, and transferability of
power. And I also, Mr. Chairman, promise not to read his memos to me.
Thank you. I think we've gained a lot. You were an unanticipated guest, and I think you've
well. Well, let me say this is not my first trip to Alaska. Some 40 years ago, I was an 18-year-old seaman aboard a Coast Guard cutter that spent a lot of time from Ketchikan to Attu and the Bering Sea and places of that sort. And the Alaska that I remember, the Juno that I remembered as an 18-year-old, is different from the one that I came into last year.
Well, thank you. I'm going to introduce the people who are at the table other than the committee members. And on this side, we have President O'Dowd, and we have Regent Ann Parrish and Regent Gordon Evans. And this way, we have Chancy Croft, we have Gail Phillips, then we have Bob Maloney. So, and I'm not taking sides one way or the other, but why don't we do this? We'll start off, and President O'Dowd, you can give an overview of how you see things should be. And then who on this side? Chancy? Okay, and then let's just start that way and it'll get us going. So President O'Dowd.
Thank you, Senator. Get my machine in place here. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Donald O'Dowd, President of the University of Alaska. I appreciate the opportunity to share with you today some views on the restructuring issue in which we have been involved now since the 31st of October, and to give you an idea of what we're doing and why we're doing it and what we think the results will be. I should comment that the term restructuring was chosen because we're talking about a redesign, a major change in a university's configuration, not just an organizational change. So we've used that term to try and indicate something more profound than moving names and people and even functions around on an organization chart. There are several components to what we call restructuring, and these tend to get confused and sometimes missed. But let me just identify four parts of this process that I think are important. First, we plan, and most importantly, to create three new universities. These are institutions that don't exist today in their current form, and they do represent a new effort on the part of the university to provide a different kind of service to the state. In Anchorage, to begin with, our plan there is to merge Anchorage Community College, the University of Alaska Anchorage, and the Cree statewide administration offices. In addition, we would join to that Matsu Community College, Kenai Peninsula Community College, and Kodiak Community College in a new institutional configuration. Prince William Sound Community College would remain as it is currently, but would be affiliated with the new regional campus in Anchorage. In Fairbanks, our proposition, which is now underway, is to merge Tanana Valley Community College with the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and then to bring together, in addition, the services to rural Alaska north of the Alaska Range, essentially. Fairbanks currently has a program on the North Slope. We would join to Fairbanks now the educational services for the interior, Bristol Bay, the Aleutians, as well as the community colleges at Kotzebue, Nome, and in Bethel. So these would form a new configuration in Fairbanks. Fairbanks is a state institution in the sense that its programs are currently all over the state, and our proposal is to strengthen its role in the interior, though it already offers courses throughout the interior at the upper division level and at the graduate level. Juneau would be a new institution combining the University of Alaska Juneau, Ketchikan Community College, and Islands Community College in a new institution. So those are the three regional institutions that we are proposing to develop. But I should comment that Fairbanks has not been regional, and it will continue its statewide mission as well as its new regional service area. The second part of this is the development of a new vocational technical approach for the university. Our proposal is to basically develop a more flexible, a more mobile, a more responsive way of serving vocational technical needs in the state. These needs would be served where they are today in the current locations, but we would like to be able to move programs in and out of the existing locations more quickly and more directly than we're able to do right now. One of the problems that we've gotten into over the years is adding a vocational technical person at a particular location as a faculty member. That individual gains tenure rather quickly, and then within a few years, all the people in that region who want to become carpenters or plumbers or electricians gain those skills, but the university remains committed to a full-time person in that location, often with the enrollment dropping to 6 or 8 people a year, 10 people a year who want that particular educational opportunity. We think we can do better than that by deploying our resources more carefully around the state with a coordinating function located in Anchorage. We propose to develop a rural college, which is part of the new Fairbanks institution. Its function would be to deliver not only community college level education, but advanced levels of education as well throughout the interior region, the West Coast, and down in the Aleutians during southwestern Alaska. This program is an expansion of an extension of what we are already doing, but we would do it in a coordinated way so that all the people in Nome, for example, working for 3 or 4 current separate activities in the university would now be brought together in one regional direction, one regional control. Fourth point is the development of some new statewide initiatives. For example, fisheries and marine sciences. We propose to bring together our 5 different scattered operations in that area under one leadership and into one organization, but at the 5 locations. The people in Kodiak would remain in Kodiak, and ideally we'd expand the program in Kodiak, but we would do it in a coordinated way throughout the state in trying to provide services in the fisheries marine science area. The Alaska Center for International Business, which is currently subject of a bill introduced this past week, is another form of new state initiative which we have conceptualized under the restructuring effort. Why should we do all this? Why are we taking on this kind of challenge at this time? Three reasons. One is loss of funds. Our direct appropriation, if the governor's budget in its current form is approved, will have dropped $36 million in 2 years. With other new expenditures we've had and expenditures we've had to absorb, we have in a two-year period of time $50 million less operating money than we had back in the end of 19 FY85, which is a lot of money. About 27% of our operating budget has disappeared over this time frame. That's reason to take a look at what you are doing. We have a lot of bureaucracy in the university. It grew up over the years for many reasons, in part because we could afford it, I believe. And the bureaucracy, and to a degree, was committed to providing organizational control in a number of locations around the state. Our proposal is to make that control regional, to reduce the number of administrative personnel by perhaps 100 to 120, to save resources that way rather than reduce the instructional personnel. And our current plan does not call for a reduction in instructional people. It does call for reduction in administrative people. They're not very happy with that, but I think it's a decision that's a wise one for the university. And finally, we do all this because I think when you lose the kind of money that we have lost in the last multi-year period now, you need to look at what you're doing and see if you can't do it better, more cheaply, more compactly, more sensibly. And it's for that reason that we've chosen the direction that we have. Now, there are a lot of concerns about all this. For example, will the mission of the community colleges be lost? I don't believe it will be, because I believe we can make, and the board has made a commitment, to protect that mission in the new institutions. Not easy, and it will only happen if we really want it to happen. I believe that commitment is there. Open admissions characterizes all our campuses today except one, the University of Alaska Anchorage. It would characterize all of our new campuses, as well as a concern within those campuses for non-traditional students. About 75% of our student body university-wide is non-traditional. That's what we do well. That's what we will continue to do. And I see no danger that if we turned away from the non-traditional student, we'd lose most of our enrollment. I doubt that anyone sees that as desirable. Remedial and developmental courses are offered today at all our campuses. I believe those should continue and perhaps be expanded. I've heard it said that we will only have vocational technical education in Anchorage. That's not the case. Next year, vocational and technical education will be at every location it is this year in almost the same form that it is this year. We will, however, over time, change the offerings in those different locations around the state as we have a chance to study where the needs are and how we can deploy our people in an effective way. Accreditation has been raised as an issue. I am confident that accreditation will continue. We will, however, need to go through an accreditation of the new institutions once they're organized and in place, and we are working on the process of doing that at the present time. The cost of education to students will not rise markedly in the immediate future. We have put forth a proposal to reduce the cost of tuition to a portion of our students in another year, assuming we can work out the technical issues that are associated with that. One ACC student came to me the other day and said in great concern, all the courses I'm taking will disappear and my faculty will be gone next year. The truth is, all of the faculty will still be in Anchorage at the new institution. All of them will probably be teaching just about what they're teaching this year, I would anticipate. And the range of courses available this year will be available next year, and since the faculty will not change, probably indefinitely into the future. There is no plan to change the offerings of courses except as the faculty over time decide that is desirable. Let me just mention a few gains which I see. I believe we can build a more compact, efficient, and economical university by doing what we have proposed. It's There is less administration in this new institution than in the one that we have right now, and we are already cutting back on administrative lines markedly in anticipation of putting the new program in place in the next couple of months. I believe it's a more balanced university and that we can attend to a full spectrum of student needs in each of these three institutions at all of the locations, though it will take time for us to build a mechanism to reach out to our more remote sites. I think it will be a more humane and more helping university because we will be able to combine the outreach and the sensitivity skills that have been indicated as so much a part of our community colleges with our other institutions so that we will have, I think, a better and more open receptivity to students than we have had on some of our campuses in these new combined institutions, which bring together the people who have been so effective in relating to the communities into new groupings. I think we'll have a more unified university. One of the things that's always troubled me about this university in the last couple of years has been the lack of cooperation among the units, the lack of sharing, which I think will be attained more easily by the groupings that we are proposing. The units are of a better size than the ones we have now. We have many very small units, many of which find it hard to use effectively their equipment, their laboratories, their people resources, because we don't have a sizable student population over which to spread these resources. We will have that in the new institutional configuration. In Anchorage, I think we will have a stronger institution because we will not have the division that has been there in the past, a division which has been so apparent in the last few months, which seems to me cannot be good for education and can't be good for Anchorage either. I think we'll be able to do a better job in research and in public service by the ability to bring together more people with a wider range of skills in a location so that we can serve more people effectively. I guess the ultimate question is, can it work? I think it can. This plan has not been borrowed from anywhere else. It has been tailored for Alaska. It's designed to meet our current situation and our location. I don't know of models elsewhere that are quite like the one that we are proposing. I suspect there are some, but we have not looked elsewhere. We have looked internally and said, what will work for us? What will work in this economic climate? What will work in this time when our resources are severely strained? I think it's daring, it's innovative, it's challenging, it will be difficult. I think it can be done. It can be done if the regents are committed to it, the administration wants it to happen, and ultimately it begins to provide good services to the people that the university relates to.
Okay, thank you. We're going to hold questions until after we hear Chancey Croft. And before Mr. Croft makes his presentation, I do want to let you know that Bob Maloney is an accounting instructor at the Anchorage Community College, and Gail Phillips is the president of the Alaska Association of Community College Council, and that Chancey Croft is president of the Community College Coalition of Alaska. So with that, Senator, he's proper, isn't it?
His picture's on the wall, you know.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. We'll let Senator Croft begin. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. I was particularly pleased when you called a couple weeks ago or 10 days ago, whenever it was, to invite me to come down here, even if it meant that I had to pay my own way. It was the first time that I've been back to Juneau during the time of a legislative session since 1978, and I was impressed with the change that has occurred in Juneau and a change that has occurred in the legislature as well, the differences that you see, but I'm reminded when we're talking about the university how in many ways, there's been a lot of change with regard to the legislature. One of the topics that still is current in the legislature is the role of the legislature as it relates to the University of Alaska and how the legislature, which is charged with annually appropriating the resources of the state and ensuring that the result of that is the priorities that the people want. How the legislature in that process does so in a way to preserve the freedom that the university feels is important that it maintain in performing its job. And I think there are some reasons why there has been a particular tension between the legislature and the university in the past. And it seems as though the question of community colleges brings to the fore that tension as much as any issue that the legislature faces as far as the university is concerned. It's probably not without significance that after the 1976 session, where separation of the community colleges from the university was very seriously proposed and almost passed, that the university set up the administrative system to ensure the protection and development of community colleges that the Board of Regents recently abolished. And I think that a part of the tension has to do with the fact that the university has viewed itself, and maybe rightly so, as committed to protecting its exclusive domain, and it has resented and guarded against any real intrusion by the legislature in the process of conducting its business. And I think community colleges run counter to that philosophy. It may well be that you want a university that is constantly on guard against any type of public participation, particularly through a political process in its decision making. But community colleges have existed, have been created or developed because of a healthy and robust involvement with the community. As a matter of fact, the whole impetus for the community college development has come not from the University of Alaska, but it sprung up from the communities themselves. The communities have provided the impetus, often provided the resources, both the physical as well as the financial for that. As a matter of fact, while we are told in this restructuring plan that there are going to be three units throughout the state within the university system, there are in fact four. The Prince William Sound institution continues to exist because it receives funds from Valdez, and it simply cannot be placed in the organizational structure that is being proposed. And that's typical or common with regard to community colleges. Community colleges have come up because of community involvement, and as a matter of fact, that's the reason that the Ketchikan School Board has a suit pending against the university at this very point, not just because the letters from the chair of the Ketchikan School Board went unanswered by the university for months while they were implementing this program, but because Ketchikan, as well as other institutions throughout the state, has a contract with the university to provide community colleges. I think that the present plan of the university is going to make it extremely difficult for the legislature, at a time of increased interest about the availability of funds, to really determine what results you're getting for the money you're spending. We're not like, except for Hawaii, really any other state, and we're not like Kentucky, in that we have all of our public higher education under one institution. Other states, Washington not only has
community colleges, but they have other universities, other public universities as well. So there is a means by which you can compare in the allocation of the resources of the state on an annual basis. What you're getting for the dollars you're spending one place and what you're getting for the dollars you're spending another. Now, I'm not suggesting that you need to create an Alaska State University in conjunction with the University of Alaska, but I am saying that you obtain an ability to compare the results of what you do if you don't have one monolithic institution. And that, as a matter of fact, a good way to allow the legislature to obtain some comparison of the result of the legislative expenditure is to appropriate by function. And to appropriate by function would mean a separation of the community colleges from the university system. The result of doing anything else, it seems to me, is to perpetuate this tension that has existed between the legislature and the university for decades. And that is, if what you really want the university to do is to emphasize technical education, and you don't think they're doing it sufficiently, do you pass us a provision in their budget that says, here, you will do this? Well, we know from times past that when the legislature has tried to tell the university to do things, whether it involves Arctic research with regard to frostbite and the effect of coal on human beings, or other things, the university has felt so committed to preserving its freedom that it has even turned back money when the legislature wanted some particular function emphasized. It seems to me that if you have a separation between community colleges and the university, it will allow the legislature to appropriate the resources in a way which will really not interfere with the freedom that the university feels is important. I think that it is going to allow the legislature, if it so desires, to emphasize the role of community colleges. And with regard to the ability of the university to really advocate and expand community colleges, not only am I concerned by the past record of the university, which has either been indifference or hostility to the creation of community colleges, I think that it's going to be very difficult to believe that a university which will not even allow the term community colleges to be used is going to emphasize the value of community colleges. Now, maybe I'm placing too much emphasis on the importance of a name, the name like Chancy Cross, and the time you have a tendency to do that, but nonetheless, I do think that if you cannot even use the term community colleges in describing your organizational structure, it's hard to believe that anybody is going to emphasize that or that you really have a goal towards the development of community colleges. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. I'm going to first open to the committee folks and run everything through the chair, because I found out that sometimes people get excited.
He would be governor today if he had followed my advice. I had a slogan for him, up, up in the loft with Chancy Croft. That's true. Mr. Chairman, I think Mr. Croft makes an interesting point, and he hits on something that has really been concerning to me. I think he pointed out the issue of the legislature's involvement with the university, and going back in my own mind through to my early days here before Dr. O'Dowd was here and long ago, I was struck by the fact that when the legislature wanted the university to do something, and we were often involved in Anchorage issues, the regents would say, well, that's fine, but you're number 11 on the priority list, so you're going to have to give us money for numbers 1 through 10 before you can get to number 11. And I can understand the academic freedom arguments for that, but I'd like to maybe ask the panelists to comment on the next proposition, which is that in addition to to the argument Mr. Croft made, which has to do with the ability to compare, and the fact that we go to Kentucky or Iowa or Nebraska or Kansas to find out the answers to how do they do it, means that we don't have benchmarks within the state. I'd like to get some discussion about another matter, which is my belief that if we had those competing systems, each would be more efficient because each
is going to allow the legislature, if it so desires, to emphasize the role of community colleges. And with regard to the ability of the university to really advocate and expand community colleges, not only am I concerned by the past record of the university, which has either been indifference or hostility to the creation of community colleges, I think that it's going to be very difficult to believe that a university which will not even allow the term community colleges to be used is going to emphasize the value of community colleges. Now, maybe I'm placing too much emphasis on the importance of a name. The name like Chancy Cross, some of the time you have a tendency to do that. But nonetheless, I do think that if you cannot even use the term community colleges in describing your organizational structure, it's hard to believe that anybody is going to emphasize that or that you really have a goal towards the development of community colleges. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. I'm going to first open it to committee folks and run everything through the chair because I found out that sometimes people get excited.
He would be governor today if he had followed my advice. I had a slogan for him, up, up in the loft with Chancy Croft. That's true. Mr. Chairman, I think Mr. Croft makes an interesting point, and he hits on something that has really been concerning me. I think he pointed out the issue of the legislature's involvement with the university, and going back in my own mind through to my early days here before Dr. O'Dowd was here and long ago, I was struck by the fact that when the legislature wanted the university to do something, and we were often involved in Anchorage issues, the regents would say, well, that's fine, but you're number 11 on the priority list, so you're going to have to give us money for numbers 1 through 10 before you can get to number 11. And I can understand the academic freedom arguments for that, but I'd like to maybe ask the panelists to comment on the next proposition, which is that in addition to the argument Mr. Croft made, which has to do with the ability to compare, and the fact that we go to Kentucky or Iowa or Nebraska or Kansas to find out the answers to how do they do it, means that we don't have benchmarks within the state. I'd like to get some discussion about another matter, which is my belief that if we had those competing systems, each would be more efficient because each would know that the other was going to be making a presentation of a budget in public to the legislature. And each would know that if it expanded unwisely its academic, its administrative side, the other would look very good by comparison. So that seems to me that we might get more efficiency even before those budgets or budget requests come to Juneau. And maybe Dr. O'Dowd, Mr. Croft, or the other panelists can speak to that.
Who cares to go first? Okay, Ann Parrish.
On behalf of the Board of Regents, I guess I'd like to speak first to this ongoing political distancing, or in terms of the communication, the attitude that the regents don't want to work with the legislature on the university. It may be that since you haven't been to Juneau since 1978, that you don't have a sense for what has occurred there. I've been on the Board of Regents for 4 years. I've been to the legislature a number of times. I think I speak for the entire Board of Regents and the administration in terms of their commitment to work with the definition of this public institution with the legislature. And there is a strong commitment of the board to work with you to get the feedback on where the public need is, and to do that within the academic community that we're in charge of oversight for. I know that the past has not been perfect. I believe that today is significantly better, and I believe the board has a commitment to work with the legislature on that in this new restructuring plan, and I believe that the new structure of the plan will also provide a more balanced approach to that in terms of the three regional institutions. Secondly, in terms of, I guess, creating two separate systems in order to get independent viewpoints on education, it would seem to me that the resources may be better spent effectively evaluating what we're doing now. And I know that the regents have asked for measurement tools to be developed in order to not only see what the headcount is, but what the quality is and what the resources are by Alaskan community. I question whether or not, with a population of 500,000 people, the state of Alaska can afford to support two separate systems, two separate administrations, rather than to put those resources into making one more effective.
Go ahead, Mr. Pro.
Well, I would just like to add, I think the question, though, is how the legislature can be sure that what it wants to emphasize, and I think that the legislature not only has a right, but has an obligation to decide what we want to emphasize. We have prohibited dedicated funds in this state because we think it's important that each year we determine how the financial resources of the state are to be allocated. And so I think it's not just the legislature's right, but its obligation to decide what it wants in terms of education. And if you don't have some separation by function, it seems to me it's going to perpetuate this fight that's existed in the past. Now, if there is a new attitude on the Board of Regents, I think that that's fine. I haven't been back to Juneau to testify at a legislative session in 9 years, but I do talk to legislators from time to time. I even talk to people who have been on the Finance Committee who have a particular familiarity with the university budget, and I have not detected any change in attitude as far as the legislature is concerned. And I don't think that the reason for that is because of the individuals on the Board of Regents are the individuals in the legislature. I think that the question has to do with the system that we have here more than any particular individual or group of individuals or political philosophy at any point. I think it's a question of how you set up a system to minimize that tension and to maximize the allocation of resources.
President O'Dowd.
Mr. Chairman, I would observe that in the last couple of years, the legislature, through the legislative intent process, has indicated a great deal in the way of concern about the operation and organization of the university. And I've been involved in answering the intent notes. And my impression is that we're about 95 to 98% in agreement with, or we meet the terms of those notes. Sometimes we simply can't practically do so, we're just simply unable to provide a particular piece of information or a particular response. But for the most part, we do respond to that device, which I know the legislature uses to convey its concerns about the university.
So Senator Curtola, and then Senator Croft. Senator Croft, for one, I think you're pretty much on top of the legislative activity at an old legislator seldom lets go of some communication, particularly in areas of his interest, and you remain very definitely interested in this arena. You wouldn't be chairman of the committee now if you weren't. There's a couple of questions, and I know we're just getting into it. Your experiences and mine have paralleled, Senator Croft, although I was not a supporter of legislation you originally introduced. I do have a couple of questions about this, and it may go to the bill, because many of us
until a bill gets before us in committee, except for the efforts of testimony like your own. We haven't gone through the detail of the bill, but a couple concerns I do have. One of them is, I think we need to get on top of administrative costs of small colleges. I think there needs to be some method of getting on top of that cost. When we name presidents of college, and we've got to have vice presidents, academic deans. Probably wisdom would have it that many of the smaller schools shouldn't have that much overhead structure. And I think President O'Dowd does make a strong point for reallocation. I don't care what system we use, but reallocation to maximum extent, funding for getting back to the teaching level. My main problem here, and has been, and you know the constitutional provisions, and they were set at the times of Joe McCarthy and that period in which we were very much concerned about thought control by legislative bodies. We wanted to separate direct politics from telling us what library books we're going to have and what we're going to teach. Nonetheless, the legislature is the father of the community college system. I understand now, no matter what we do at this level, the Board of Regents allocates, kind of like the Fish and Game Board. The legislature doesn't allocate. And a formula for allocation, a fairless formula that does not have who's in power at this moment in the legislature, who's chairman of finance, how do you get at an allocation that's improvement upon the Board of Regents allocation method now, which I many times am in conflict with, not so much recently, however. The allocation of resources on a fairness basis, on a need basis, on a developing school basis versus, let's say, a power basis, a numbers basis, or a position of who's in power at the moment, and so we shift from time to time, but not well, the resources to support these various institutions. That concerns me. How do we get at that? And it does lead to one other question, but I'll wait on that, because you've thought this out for years. And a fairness doctrine of allocation of resources, particularly in troubled times. Senator Croft.
Well, I think there are several ways you can do it, but I think probably some basic formula is going to be the most satisfactory approach in the long run. And that doesn't mean that from time to time the legislature can't change the formula.
Sure.
And it means from time to time the legislature probably will and probably should. But I think that you can provide a certain level of basic funding and then vary it from time to time. And I think that that's a value of doing that is that you have some comparison, some ability to make those type of decisions based on the result that you see. As far as the community colleges are concerned, I think you're going to find, if you do that, that you need very little administrative supervision. I don't think that there is any real justification for a lot of administration on the community colleges. You're going to get from the school boards in the particular area where the community colleges are located a certain amount of supervision in the first place. And I don't think that you need the high level of structure that you have with a university trying to deliver programs throughout the state. I do not accept the argument that the best way to get efficiency in the state of Alaska is a single statewide organization. I do not accept the notion that bigger is better or that one is cheaper. And I would suggest that that's not a very Alaskan notion to say that that what we get as a land, the last frontier in a land of people that prides themselves as individualists, that all of our higher education from a public point of view comes from one group. I just think that Alaskans would rather have an individual type of comparison. A single monolithic structure is not typically Alaska. It's not a typical Alaska solution to anything.
Senator Kitty had a second question.
I'll wait.
Okay, we go to Senator Zaroff and then Senator Jordan. Senator Zaroff.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess the whole purpose of the introduction of the bill was kind of a follow-up there to a bill that was introduced several years back, which, looking at the history, has indicated that concept or question has been around for some time. And my major concern, of course, at that time was the representation of some entity out there providing higher education in rural Alaska. And it was difficult for me to understand how the rural schools, rural people, would gain any adequate representation. And the current structure of the Board of Regents at least indicates that there's some rural representation, but I don't see any real strong representation from community colleges on the current Board of Regents. And maybe that'll come about there in terms of change. But I guess I'm concerned there, because if you don't have any adequate representation, we're down here because we represent a certain group of people or a certain segment of the state. We're that voice. That voice I don't see at this time as being a strong voice on the Board of Regents, as one there that's going to continue and to express the concerns of these smaller communities or colleges. The voice in the wilderness concept there is not one that I really like very much, because you go out there and do all the screaming you want there, and you're not going to get heard when you don't have any representation. And I would like to just relate there my most current experience there to kind of express or to show you how I feel that we get lost in the larger bureaucracy of the system. The extension agent position there in Kodiak was funded for a year. The individual had to resign because of some other problems and decided to move on. Well, naturally, you would think that the position would have been reinstated, or at least filled. After inquiring, I found that there were some other problems there in the whole structuring process, or in the budgetary process in Fairbanks, where the extension agent service, or the component is managed. And to make up for the difference in the funding that they needed to continue that central operation, the extension agent in Kodiak was not replaced. The community has come to rely quite heavily on the services being provided under that particular person or office that was there. The 4-H kids are not going to be able to go out and do their thing, and the people in the community that were interested in benefiting from that service to get answers to questions that they have about what can they grow there, what can't they grow there, and all that, that's not there. And I don't know where they're going to go to get that type of expertise at this time. So I guess I get a little bit concerned now when you say that we're going to pull everything back in and put them under various components where we're not going to have any direct input as to how or where the funding is going to go once you get it into these three new systems.
And I think this is not for any transmission.
Okay.
This is Kodiak, and we don't hear anything.
Right. Can you hear me now? I can hear
real well.
This is the
bridge
operator. Juno is still on the line, but they must be having some transmission. Please stand by.
Can you hear me on this one? Fred Bunch, you sit at my table.
Yes, sir. We can go ahead. This is a great job, right?
Okay, I guess my main concern just gets down to communications. And I'm not quite sure how the community colleges are going to fall under the new reorganization plan. At least now, under the current system, there appears to be some means of getting some direct input into the administration. But under the new organizational plan, when you start putting people under these various components and you start putting them further and further away, that line of communications to the top becomes more difficult to penetrate. And if you don't have anybody up at the top up there that's looking out after your interests and to express your concerns or your feelings or your problems to the entire board, your voice is never, at least my feeling, is never going to get heard from the small schools that are out there in rural Alaska or that feel that they're going to be left out. So maybe we might just address there how the new reorganization plan is going to affect the community colleges. How are they going to be able to fit right in there? How are they going to be able to communicate with with you, Dr. O'Dowd, and also the Board of Regents.
Dr. O'Dowd?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not familiar with the specific case of the CES agent in Kodiak. However, at the present time, that is that decision is made from the CES office, which is located in Fairbanks, the Cooperative Extension Service office there. And the agent in Kodiak operates directly from the office in Fairbanks. Under the new proposal, the new plan that we would like to put into effect, the agent of CES would now be under the director of the Kodiak operation, so that there, as well as other university employees who might be in that same community or immediate region. So I think we will have then a more sensitive evaluation of what's going on in Kodiak or any other of our smaller communities, because the local director will have responsibility for all the diverse university employees working in that area. It might be a four-year faculty member delivering graduate courses in education in that region. It could be a cooperative extension agent, could be a marine advisory program agent, or it could be members of the local community college faculty or the new college faculty, so that I see perhaps a better way in the future of responding to the kind of concern that Senator Zara indicated than we have in place right now.
Regent Evans?
If I could follow up, also in responding to Senator Zaroff's concern, absent having a representative from each of the 12, I think the 12 communities that have either a university or a community college at this point, on the board, there's no way you're going to have direct communication to the board anyhow, except through those people. And right now, I think that I'm on from Southeastern, and I feel that I represent not only the university in Juneau or the community of Juneau, but also Ketchikan and Sitka. I know Don Abel feels the same. We have both on a number of occasions visited the schools in our districts and down here, and feel that we have a good relationship with the people there, and that if they have some concerns, they're certainly free to contact us at any time, and we would pass those concerns on to the other regions or to Dr. O'Dowd. And also point out that there are, and I should also add the student regent right now, even though he is a student at the University of Alaska Juneau, is a graduate of Ketchikan Community College, and as a matter of fact, he is very committed to the community college concept also. But there are three people on the, including the student regent right now on the board, who do come from communities that are, that have community colleges or represent community college people, including Senator Sackett right now, who succeeded now Senator Hensley, who succeeded John Shively, all of whom were very outspoken advocates for the community college system. So I don't believe that community colleges have been without a voice on the board. And in fact, I would say that sometimes I think we bend over backwards to make sure that we're not causing some harm to the community colleges.
Regent Parrish.
Yes, I'd just like to follow up a little bit in terms of a way to measure and be accountable when we're basically reducing the number of management units from 14 to 3, and the board has spent significant time discussing that issue in terms of how do we protect the mission, maintain that local identity, still have the local responsiveness that we have in the existing system with the community colleges. And suffice it to say that there is presently policy being developed to ensure that, aside from the board making that commitment. I think there's two important elements. One is that we're in the process of reviewing the policy relative to local policy advisory councils. It is the intent of the board and of the plan to have significant local involvement. And then secondly, also back to this annual report that will measure the programs, the quality of the programs, and the resources by communities, so that we can see what we're doing there, in addition to the typical budgeting process that one goes through with the legislature.
Gail Phillips. You might feel free to, you know, it doesn't have to come from this end. If you feel you want to, you know, go directly across the table, that's fine, you know, with a question, that's fine.
Thank you. I share Senator Zaroff's concerns regarding the community college role in the new schools, particularly in light of communications. I've been involved with meetings now on the restructuring plan since January when President O'Dowd first appointed the committees, and it was very evident at those meetings in January that there would not be an agreement between the university people and the community college people on a new plan. The university people did not want to be part of a merged plan. The community college people did not want to be part of another plan. Everybody has their own idea of how the university and the community colleges should be run, and there wasn't agreement. In fact, just as recently as last Wednesday in Kenai, at a meeting with the Kenai campus and President O'Dowd's representatives discussing the restructuring plan, when asked what the name of the new community college or the new institute in Anchorage would be, the answer was University of Alaska. Now, that probably was a Freudian slip. As a graduate of the University of Alaska Fairbanks, I would take great exception to that. And as a representative of the community college councils around the state, I take great exception to that. I don't think the philosophy is there for a merging of the two institutes. And that is why our council so strongly supports a separate community college system.
Okay, anybody else?
I would like to.
Bob Maloney.
Thank you. I'd like to respond to the to a previous question dealing with accountability and what the state is getting in return for its money. In terms of the new institutions, I understand they are developing measures because the board, I believe, felt a little bit uncomfortable with the information they have right now, given the fact that we do have separate identifiable community colleges. So I understand there are new measures and benchmarks being developed in order to assess the new organization. But it just seems to me that once the merging of various institutions takes place, and you've got three regional institutions, the ability to measure community college versus university programs is lost, and what you have is you have some regional comparisons, you have some cost per student comparisons, but it's unclear to me how you would evaluate the budgetary impact between what we used to call universities and what we used to call community colleges. And with a separation, we clearly do have a measure between universities and community colleges. In the merged institutions, I'm unclear as to how you would measure that.
Senator Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me raise an issue nobody has talked about. I ask this as one who believes, as I sit here today, that first we've seen in this discussion that to the question about the legislature's regionalism, that some regionalism or some regional emphasis exists in the regions also. And I believe, as Mr. Croft does, that Senate Bill 60 would let the legislature speak to the values and priorities without getting involved in the substance of what is taught or what books are used or who teaches courses. I raised the question before about whether separation would cause more self-restraint by the institutions in their budget preparation. Nobody responded to that, so I'll just hold my own view of that. I think we're down now to the, not the $64 question, but the $8 million question. And I would put the question first to Mr. Croft and his colleagues. You apparently do not believe in the Regents' argument that separation that merger will save a lot of money and that separation will cost a lot of money. I think that it's incumbent on us as we discuss this issue to go into that and address the issue of how your own fiscal note is prepared and how you perceive you can save administrative costs with separation.
Senator Croft.
Bob's the one that should respond to that, but I would point out that at the meeting in February when the Board of Regents approved the merger plan, they also voted to submit to the legislature a budget that showed no reduction, so that the effect of the merger was not to save any money by the Board of Regents. But Bob can comment on the particular budget.
Maloney?
Thank you. Well, in terms of comparing the cost of the restructuring plan or the savings associated with the restructuring plan and potential savings, or let's just call it the fiscal impact of separation. Part of the discussion of dollars, I believe, hinges upon the philosophy or the approach to budget reductions. And a part of it, I think, we can deal with functionally. We have to have certain people doing certain jobs after separation, and some of those would require that a community college system establish new positions. And at some point, Brian Rogers and I sat down, we went through the statewide budget, for example, and tried to assess that impact. And clearly there would be some additional positions necessary within a community college administration if they were to completely separate. There are things that are only done one time at statewide. So there clearly are some of those additional positions that would be necessary. Beyond that, the ability of either system to operate and to organize would depend obviously on how much money is available. We put together a fiscal note, for example, which took the approach that yes, we would need to provide these positions, these additional positions, and we would have a burden, a significant burden to bear in terms of required budget reductions in order to come in within a reasonable request for this year. In other words, our approach was that we could identify, and I believe the figures came out to about $5 million worth of reductions within the community college structure. Some of those would be in the form of salary reductions. Some of those would be in the form of the elimination of duplicated positions, looking at the individual community colleges and significantly reducing the level of administration. So our approach was to say that within the community college system, we could eliminate duplications, we could reorganize at the individual community colleges and bring down the level of administration, and we could identify and generate in the area of $5 million of savings and operate a community college system without a reduction in academic programs. Now, the contention on the part of the university has been that would then preclude the university from making the required budget cuts that they have identified as necessary to, again, come in within a reasonable request. And I think that's where we sort of hit a roadblock, because it's our contention that they then need to look at the university center's administrations, and they need to look at ways of reorganizing those units to, in fact, come in within a reasonable budget. We both have administrations, and there are areas for reductions in both, and our approach is that if we separate, we should determine where those reductions should be allocated, and the separate units should make those decisions. The university's approach is that if we separate, that will preclude them from being able to make any more reductions because they were relying so heavily on the reductions that were coming from the community college side. So, in terms of total cost, it's our contention that we could operate a community college system without a reduction in academic programs, and we could identify what we believe is a fair share of the necessary cuts this year. And that's basically what our approach has been in terms of the dollar.
Any President of that?
Mr. Chairman, I would propose that Mr. Rogers, who has worked on this, but Ms. Maloney would be appropriate to respond.
Rogers?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Brian Rogers, Director of Budget Development. The fiscal note issue has been a major issue, and Mr. Maloney and I did work on trying to come up with some common basis for looking at the fiscal impact. We used as a basis, I should note, the House Test Committee substitute for the bill, which is somewhat different from the bill that's before this committee right now. That bill does take out a significant amount of capital fiscal impact in theirs. We went through the statewide administration function by function and identified at least $1.5 million of duplicated costs costs that would have to be repeated in a separate system. About half of that is in insurance alone, where effectively buying two policies costs you more than buying one policy for an aggregate. To do that, we assumed, however, that accounting and computing could continue to be unified, and there may be some problem with that. But even unifying those, you're looking at an additional cost of $1.5 million of administration. Furthermore, the university system would not be able to make the restructuring savings in a regional manner that we see in the Board of Regents restructuring plan. While I suppose it's hypothetical that one could consider a merger of UAA and UAF, if you think the politics of a merger of ACC and UAA are difficult, you might consider what they'd be of merging more than one four-year institution. There are significant impacts of fiscal impacts of separation. The board's budget this year reflects the absorption of one-time cuts in this fiscal year. The board is cutting $8 million from compensation, $7 million from programs, and $6 million from administration. The governor has restored a fair bit on the program side, program support side. I just don't think it's reasonable to expect that when we are unable to restructure on a regional basis, unable to save the $6 million, that funding can automatically come from somewhere else. That is the assumption in the coalition's fiscal impact statement. That assumption is, well, take one-third of statewide administration and put it in the community college system, and the systems will still work. I just don't think that's reasonable. If you take leased telephone lines from Anchorage to Fairbanks and have one-third go into one system and two-thirds go into the other system, you don't have a telephone line that's worth anything. That same thing happens in a lot of the functions. And so I think that to truly reflect what the costs of separation are, you're looking at a cost of excess of $6 million, assuming that some functions can be maintained by the university or by the community colleges for the two systems.
Senator Joseph.
Obviously, I've shown some of my sentiments in the matter. I think that there are some intangible savings downstream and more efficiency in the sense that when Senator Croft was talking about monolithic structures not being the Alaskan way, I also think it's not, I might delve into that the American way, in the sense that we always give lip service, at least, to the benefits of competition. And to the consumer and to efficiency. But I think this problem is very difficult for us to resolve. It's going to be resolved maybe in the committee chaired by the senator from Bethel, not here. But on the one hand, we have people saying that it's at least $6 million. On the other hand, we have people saying that there's going to be net savings disregarding those downstream effects I referred to. And I don't think we're set up this afternoon to resolve that, Mr. Chairman, but I see a real cognitive problem for us in getting to grips with that.
Regent Parrish.
Yes, I'd just like to comment relative to the competitiveness and keeping the accountability in the system. I believe that under the restructured university that we're proposing, there will be significant accountability and competitiveness between the three regional institutions, and that will also have significantly more force than we've had under the 14 competing institutions in the past.
Yes, Senator Jones.
Senator Josephson asked the same question I wanted to get to, was the $35 million fiscal note I saw come in attached to the community college system. And I'm not too clear on, you're saying that the $35 million, am I correct, was it thereabouts $35 million you say would be needed for this first year? What's the first year number for the community college?
Well, let me give you two numbers and explain what they are. Okay, given the current community college units, given the current community college units, if we take those campuses and those administrations which are currently community college units, and And we start with those budgets as they currently exist. And then we deduct from that amount the $5 million in cuts that we propose would be a reasonable share for the community college system. That number would be 36,827. Now that is before dealing with the issue of the statewide services that need to somehow be separated or shared or continued. But just looking at the current community college units, minus the $5 million, would be a $36,827 budget. And just for purposes of comparison, the current level of funding for those same units right now, this fiscal year, is $41 million. And because of some internal allocations that would be necessary, irregardless of separation, the same budget next year would be $42 million. So we're proposing that number would be 36.8 after the reductions.
All right, I'm correct in assuming it's 37 million dollar budget is what you're looking at for the first year.
That's correct.
Now, that doesn't take into account some sharing with the university system, some maybe faculty or buildings or facilities or libraries. What type of sharing are you talking about?
No, the type of sharing or the allocation I was referring to is the statewide administration, which is the president's office and the vice president and provost and the director of accounting and budgeting and payroll, and all of those things that we do at a centralized statewide level for all of our various units. The statewide computing and those types of services. If we have two separate systems, we will need to deal with how do we separate this. It's a right now about an $11 million budget. And how do we separate that and continue to provide services to these two new units? You know, is it a sharing relationship, or is it a straight split and we go out and buy separate services? And that's a difficult issue. That's really the crux, I think, of the impact of separation. And there's just different approaches that can be used for dealing with that issue. And that's the other allocation that I was referring to.
Brian Rogers. You want to address the same question?
Mr. Chairman, I think that it would be a mistake to assume to see that the $35 million or $36 million they're talking about as additional money to the current. What they're looking at is basically dividing the current budget into two pots. Where we have a problem with that is twofold. One, the level of reduction necessary to meet the budget target that the coalition would set for the three university campuses would be a cut from $91 million this year to $83 million next year, a cut of $8 million for the three campuses. The statewide administration is split between the two. And what the coalition's method of apportionment does is to apportion the reductions all to the three university campuses, a total of $8 million in reductions. And it's just, they're trying to just divide up the existing pot. What we're trying to say is, by separating, you lose the chance to attain the savings, and you create additional costs.
Yeah, folks.
Based on the fact that right now, out of the university's budget, about one-third of that budget is appropriated to community colleges. That is the figure that we worked with. And I think it's critical, and I think it's very important to realize that we have one-third of the budget, university's budget for community colleges, and yet we have two-thirds of the number of students. We can be far more efficient with our dollar on a separated basis than is allocated to the community colleges right now under the university.
On a policy point, I think the committee may want to address this question of the fiscal impact in maybe a slightly different way. I think that Brian believes what he says. The community colleges, of course, any administrator at the community college is prohibited from participating in any discussion like this by the restrictions that have been imposed on them. And while Bob has done an excellent job in preparation of the budget, speaking candidly, I think most legislators are somewhat suspicious of any fiscal note that's prepared by an organization that is advocating something. And it doesn't mean that anybody is doing anything improper, it's just that